Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. We are live this morning, and if you resonate with the topic that we're going to be talking about, please call in, ask questions, get some of your things answered that you need, or if you've got a comment, we'd be happy to hear it. Telephone number 530-605-4567. Okay, I have in the studio here with me today my special guest, Dr. Richard Malotke. Say hi.
Good morning, Dr. Patty.
Good morning, Dr. Richard. We're the Mutual Admiration Society here. We're going to be talking about kind of a poopy subject.
That's a clever way to put it.
Yeah, I could say the S word, but then Jared, my producer, might have to beat me. So we're going to be talking about colonoscopies and endoscopies. And there's a really important reason why we need to talk about this. This isn't just about medical stuff. This is about psychological stuff. And I'm going to do the risky thing here and do some personal disclosure and tell you why we're doing this subject. When you turn 50, you have to have a colonoscopy, or you're supposed to have a colonoscopy.
Right.
Because it's a good preventative thing. And so a whole lot of my friends and everything have had their colonoscopy, and then you're supposed to have another one 10 years later. And what I hear in my practice all the time, what I hear from friends, is they are massively avoiding either the first colonoscopy or the second colonoscopy. They just don't want to do it. And I can kind of relate to that because I didn't want to do it.
If you want to do it, you should refer the patient to a psychiatrist.
Yes, because if somebody says, ooh, I want to do a colonoscopy, something's really wrong.
We got a problem.
Yeah, we got a problem. But I would find myself not wanting to do it, partly because I'm a pretty modest person and I'm kind of shy. I know I'm very gregarious and outgoing personality-wise, but I'm not the person that just goes, oh, come on, bring it on. I am shy at pap smears. I'm shy at, I mean, all this kind of stuff makes me cringe, and I have a hard time going forward and doing it. So I would get into this mode of just like, okay, I'll do it later. And even though I kind of understood it and all that, my shyness and my hesitation would overcome my knowledge that I should do it. Until I had this conversation with my friend, Dr. Malotke, who told me information that I had never known before. And when he really explained it to me, my first thought was, okay, I'll do this. And I did. I scheduled it. And I did it last Friday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did it. I survived. And my colonoscopy was perfectly clear, which is wonderful. So I don't have to go again for 10 years. But what I realized is so many people do not know the information that Dr. Malotke gave me. And I consider myself educated. I'm really into medical stuff. I read a lot. Dr. Malotke would accuse me of doing Dr. Google.
And sometimes.
Sometimes. But I consider myself educated and not particularly avoidant, and I don't really do denial. But when he really taught me what I needed to know, I learned a lot. And it helped me overcome my hesitation. So my next thought was, I need to do a show on this because so many people don't understand why we do these, why it's important, why we shouldn't do denial and all that. So in this show today, in this first section, we're going to talk about how it's difficult for people emotionally. But then in the second section, Dr. Malotke is going to teach everybody what he taught me about why should we do our colonoscopy and what happens if we don't and what are the risks involved. We're also going to talk a little bit about just what to expect if you go in and have your colonoscopy. Then in the third section of the show, we're going to talk about endoscopy. When do you need to have the tube down your throat to check your esophagus, your stomach, and all that? And then by the fourth section of the show, we're going to give you some very specific things to do to take care of your health. Okay, so right now I want to talk a little bit about why people avoid these medical tests, colonoscopy, endoscopy, pap smears. I mean, kind of any of them, but specifically colonoscopy. And from my perspective, what I see is people are hesitant about the money, or they don't know what their insurance will cover, or they're vague about what their insurance will cover, so they're a little bit scared. Then there's the shyness, embarrassment factor. They don't want somebody messing.
No one wants a 5-foot-long black tube shoved up their bottom.
Exactly.
Basically.
Exactly. They think of words like shoved up and stuff like that, which is scary. Then the procrastination. Okay, I'll do it, but later. I'll do it next year. I don't want to. And then you told me of two things that you see all the time, and maybe you can speak to those. The fear of the results, and I don't want to do anything if I don't have any symptoms.
Yeah, the fear of the results thing is a common thing on any of those tests. Even like, I don't want to get a mammogram because if I have breast cancer, I don't want to know.
Right.
Or, all that stuff because they heard about a cousin or somebody who had it and it was horrible. And it's like your brain just doesn't want to go there. And I think that's kind of it's real common. And I think it's one of the more common reasons why people don't come to see me. I'm in a preventive game. So it's such a wonderful thing to find these things when they start and then we can save your bacon.
Yeah. And I think that's so true about everything. I see couples that come in for marital therapy when they're filing for divorce and you're thinking, my heavens, why weren't you here 10 years ago, five years ago when you first started falling apart? You want to see them before they have rectal bleeding, before they have
symptoms. Speaking to, in fact, a lot of, that's another thing. Patients will look at me and say, well, hey, I'll do the colonoscopy if I ever have a symptom.
Yeah.
And, the best story I have on that, it's not a good story, but it's most illustrative, is I had this 61-year-old guy, never, always refused colonoscopy. He would have done it if he had a symptom, that guy. I don't think he was afraid, but he came rolling in with a kidney stone. This is about 15 or 20 years ago. He comes in with a kidney stone. He's peeing blood. He's writhing on the floor. Those are really painful, and I told him he had a kidney stone, and how we diagnose those or, ascertain what's going on is you order a CAT scan. And I told him where his stone was going to be. And we got the CAT scan, and it showed the kidney stone right where I told him it was going to be. And it also showed a grapefruit-sized colon cancer that was already in his liver, already in his lungs, dead in 4 months. Because 20 years ago, the chemo didn't work very good for colon cancer. Now it does. It works pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much improved over the course of my career. But
he didn't have a symptom
cancer. He was going potty number two normally.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So he had no clue it was there. And I've seen little tumors bleed, and I've seen that huge tumor where he had no idea it was there.
Right.
It's a stealth cancer.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting is so many of the cancers that people get, if you do your preventative care, you catch them in the beginning.
Yeah.
And breast cancer, colon cancer, esophageal cancer, stomach cancer, all these ones are so treatable and preventable from becoming cancer if you catch them early. So this idea that I don't have any symptoms, I don't need to do anything, doesn't work.
No.
Procrastination, you're going to learn why this is bad because we're in the next section of the show. When Richard teaches you why you do your colonoscopy and what are the reasons that prevention is so important, you're going to realize how you could save your life because it's super important.
Yeah, if someone dies of colon cancer in 2020, it's kind of their own fault.
Yeah.
And it's horrible for me to say that because I'm sure there are some people in this town right now who are dying of colon cancer. But it's because of the avoidance of doing the screening test.
That's the main cause.
Yeah.
Well, and so I want to speak to you a little bit about my experience on Friday when I did the colonoscopy and I did the endoscopy too.
Technically, they're both endoscopies.
Yeah.
So the endoscopes are cameras that go inside of you.
Okay.
And upper scopes and lower scopes are both endoscopies. Upper scopes have this really awkward name, esophagogastroduodenoscopy, which no one really wants to say. EGD is the shorthand. That's the term that we use.
Well, my important question was when they did the colonoscopy one first, I wanted to know if they were going to change tubes.
Use the same scope. Yeah.
They changed tubes. Okay. But it was amazingly comfortable. They were kind and efficient, and Dr. Reddy's office and endoscopy center were awesome.
Yeah, and they know that you don't want to be there.
Yes. But they weren't making jokes. I always felt like my modesty was preserved. They were awesome. And I was totally put out. I didn't have to feel anything. It was great. So I won't tell you I enjoyed it, but I'll tell you I survived it, and I didn't even come out with any trauma. So this is good. All right, we've got to go to break. And when we come back, you're going to hear more about exactly why you need to do this. Be back in a minute.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and, of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Hello, I'm Carlene Niver, and I would like to personally thank you for your support while we celebrate over 4 years of business at Carlene's Restaurant and Bar. I'm so proud and excited to see our growth with loyal and new guests alike. Those of you who know me know that I love great food, but more importantly, I love to enjoy myself wherever I go. And that's what my dining team and I strive for when you walk into Carlene's. As the weather transitions, don't forget to book our banquet room for any of your upcoming holiday needs. We also offer outside catering for any occasion. Open 7 days a week, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Happy hour from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., located in downtown Reading on Center Street. A pinch of patience, a dash of kindness, and a spoonful of laughter make for the best dining experience. I look forward to celebrating over 4 years of business with you at Carlene's Restaurant and Bar.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty and Dr. Richard Malocki, and we are talking about becoming a perfect tushy. So we're talking about colonoscopies, endoscopies, and the stuff you need to do to keep yourself healthy. You were just listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. You might want to get online at Eventbrite.com. Eventbrite, Eventbrite.com. Type in Randy McGinnis and Patricia Bay. We're going to be doing a fundraiser for Shasta Arts Council on March 7th. And we're going to be doing Healing Through Music. It's going to be awesome. I think you guys should be there. Okay, and tickets are super inexpensive, too, so it'll be a really affordable concert. All right, so let's get back to talking about colonoscopies. And what I was sharing in the first part of the show is when Dr. Malocki explained to me about why it was really important to do your colonoscopy, I got it. And he gave me information that I had never known. So I want him to give you guys the colonoscopy speech.
Okay.
Go for it, Dr. Richard.
Yeah, here it goes. I think it's useful to think about your whole GI tract from your lips to your butt. It's just one long hollow tube. It's got a wide spot in the road of your stomach. And you could, really horrible thought, you could swallow a fishing weight with a 10-pound test on it, and depending on your body, either, you know, an hour or 3 or 4 days later, you'd have a piece of 10-pound fishing test all the way through. So technically, it's all on the outside of your body, even though it's on the inside of your body. And so the speech about colonoscopy is this. Almost all cancers, we think, are generated by chronic inflammation, especially GI cancers, esophageal, stomach, and colon. So chronic inflammation makes our cells have to repair themselves more frequently. It makes them have to divide more, makes them turn over more. And
it also makes them set up preventative cover-up things for spots that are inflamed.
Exactly. Okay. It has to try to repair itself all the time. So, and normal physiology, the lining of the colon cells are about the fastest dividing cells in the body. They turn over about every 5 days. And partly it's because there's 200 species of bacteria in the average healthy person's colon. And being that close proximity to those bacteria is kind of like, It's sort of like camping next to, well, I'm not going to say that. It's just bad. So our cells have to turn over frequently. And so what happens with colon cancer? So all colon cancers start out as a benign thing called a polyp. And polyps, if you see them, I've done about 1,200, 1,400 colonoscopies myself because I'm old enough to have been trained in them. And how they start is just like a little punching bag or almost like a speed bump. And there's four pre-malignant polyps. All colon cancers start as, the words are, they all start as this little speed bump called hyperplasia.
And that's level one.
That's a level one polyp. And then the longer that's in there, the more it has a chance to turn into level two polyp called an adenoma. And then the same sort of thing. The longer that adenoma is in there, it has a chance to turn into a villous adenoma, which is a level 3 polyp, and then same sort of progression. It can go on, if it's not taken out of there, it can turn into a tubular villous adenoma. And that tubular villous adenoma might be in there for a couple of years before it actually becomes a colon cancer. But all colon cancers go through that progression. The rationale for the colonoscopy is that we look in there to see if you have any polyps. And if you have them, they take them out and send them to the lab and look at them under the microscope. So the screening recommendations by the American Cancer Society, if you have a direct relative with colon cancer, you should start your screening at age 40. And also, if you have ulcerative colitis, which is a different sort of subject, but it's a problem with chronic inflammation in the colon, sometimes we'll do those, starting your colon cancer screening at much younger. I had a bleeding polyp once on an 18-year-old girl. So you just always... You know, you just always stick to the recommendations and you'll be okay. The majority of people who don't have any of that in their history start screening at age 50. And if your first scope shows no polyps, you don't have to do it again until you're 60. It's not that bad. And, you know, it's not that bad. In fact, the other thing I like to say to patients, I say, if you're a gardener, when do you pull the weeds? Do you pull them when they're an inch high or do you wait till they're 3 feet high? No, mm-hmm. Pull them when they're an inch high. It's a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rationale behind this screening test. And it's not a conspiracy for the doctors to take your money. It's nothing like that. I hate watching people die of colon cancer. It is not good.
I watched my father-in-law die of colon cancer, and it is not pretty.
No, I've seen that movie, and I don't recommend it. So no one wants to do it for the reasons Patty already laid out. And if you want to do it, we send you to the psychiatrist. But why die of that? You know, die of old age, you know.
Well, what's fascinating to me is people avoid doing these things because they don't have any symptoms. But colon cancer often has no symptoms.
Yeah, it's a stealth tumor.
Until it's too late.
Yeah. In fact, nowadays, let's take men, for instance. If a man is over 50 and doesn't smoke, his most common cancer by far to get is prostate cancer. But by far the most common cancer to kill him is colon cancer.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You can live a long time with prostate cancer.
Oh, yeah. Almost nobody who gets checked every year dies of prostate cancer.
Right.
So it just doesn't happen.
So, you know, in prostate cancer, the check for men, because they don't want anybody in that nether region with their...
No.
Fingers, and they want to look at the doctor's hand and see how big it is.
Yeah, I get a hand screening periodically.
Yeah, how big is your hand?
Well, and my friends, I put the vet glove on, you know, it comes up to my elbow.
just to freak them out.
Yeah, freak them out.
Yeah, but there's reasons to do it when you don't have any symptoms, to do it as prevention. Because the other thing they need to know is, when they're doing your colonoscopy, if they find a polyp in any stage, they're going to extract it right then. It doesn't hurt. You're already sedated. You're not going to have any even repercussions after, have maybe a little bit of bleeding from a polyp removed, but even that would be kind of
weird.
It's
really unusual to even see any bleeding. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes, you know, potty number two normally after that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, we had to put more air in. But nowadays, we don't have to even put that much air. And the scopes have really gotten better since, I think the first one that I ever saw done was 1982. And we had fiber optic scopes. They were about an inch in diameter. It was like a hose. And those were more uncomfortable, especially since we didn't have the good sedation we have now. Now we have a real good sedative drugs.
Well, and I think that's real important for people to know. Older people who have had the old type of scope, that was much bigger and not flexible and all sorts of stuff, say, I'm never doing that again.
Right, right.
You need to know that modern medicine has a very tiny, thin scope that's very flexible.
Yeah, the ones we use now are the diameter of the knuckle on my little finger.
Yeah, so they're much smaller, and you're out. And the sedation that they use, you're not dopey for days.
Someone has to drive you home, but that's about the worst part of it.
Yeah, and it's fast acting. And I, when I did it last Friday, I was totally out. I didn't feel anything. It was very comfortable. And I woke up very quickly when it was all over in the recovery room. I didn't have to know how I got from that room to the recovery room, which right. I was happy not to know that.
Yeah.
So don't avoid it because you think it might be like the one you had 20 years ago. They're very different. And they're even the one I had 10 years ago is very different than the one I had Friday. This one was... There's not a single thing that I would tell you made me uncomfortable, either embarrassment-wise, modesty-wise, physically uncomfortable, being treated in any way that made me awkward or uncomfortable. Every single part about that colonoscopy was comfortable.
Yeah, and my little story, I guess, I've got the gene on my dad's side. In fact, one of my cousins on my dad's side, she never went to the doctor. She... very nice person, never went to the doctor, never got a physical or mammogram or pap smear, definitely not the colonoscopy. And when she was 57, she was feeling lousy. And she went into the doctor, and they put her on the hospice the next day. She had like 60 colon tumors spread all through her body. And she was dead in 3 weeks.
Wow.
3 weeks from the time that she first had a symptom till the time they put her in the ground.
Well, when they go in and do your colonoscopy and they find even a 1, 2, 3, 4 level like you were talking about, your survival rate
100%
is 100% because they can get that out of there before it's cancerous. 1 through 4 is considered is precancerous.
Yeah.
1 through 3 is nothing.
Yeah. Well, and to speak to that specific thing, the frequency that you have to recheck them depends on where it is on that developmental scale. So in my case, 3 years ago when I had my scope, I had one of those tubular villous adenomas. It was a level 4 polyp. So it was one of those things where, gee, I'm glad I got my scope. And then my doctor said, well, hey, you have to come back in 3 years, which I already knew. But if you have a level 2 or 3 polyp, then most of the time that's a 5-year callback. And sometimes those speed bumps, the little hyperplasia polyps, they'll sometimes let you go 10 years. So that's, it's not something to be scared of.
Well, I was happy on Friday. They told me 10 years.
Yeah. You don't want to line up for them.
But, there is a happy colon dance that you do.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, the bad part about colonoscopy, which we haven't really addressed, but the bad part is the night before. Because the only thing worse than doing a colonoscopy is having to do a second one because you didn't get cleaned out enough.
Oh, and you said that to me, which was very motivating to do that well. But I got to tell you, how they used to do the drinking the stuff the night before 10 years ago and how I did it last Thursday night, two little bottles of stuff and you add water on top of it so you've got 16 ounces of fluid. That's all, not the huge big
gallon.
Milk jug full
gallon.
So you drink that, you drink a couple of glasses of water after that, and then you wait 4 hours and you do that again. And you drink a couple glass of water. It was so doable.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I spent most of the night vomiting because I couldn't get that whole gallon full of stuff.
And that sometimes keeps people from doing it a second time. The prep is the worst part. One of my patients,
it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, the night before you're impersonating a Saturn V rocket. Basically.
Oh, this is such an easy topic for somebody who gets embarrassed by all this stuff. Ah!
Well, yeah, that's the only bad part about colonoscopy, and I will admit no one wants to drink the prep. But when you're really well cleaned out, then the doctor can confidently tell you, hey, everything's cool and you're going to be okay.
Right. And so you want to do your prep really well so that you go in there and they can see what they need to see.
Exactly.
If you're not cleaned out, they can't see it.
Exactly.
So it's really doable, you guys. It's really doable. Talk about from the person who really didn't want to do it. I did it. I'm glad I did it. I've got 10 years before I have to do it again, and it was doable.
You rang the bell.
I rang the bell. Yes, I did. I even have a bell. I rang the bell. Carl Bott's bell sits here. Okay, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the other end and why you need to do the upper scope. All right, we'll be back in a minute.
Pets and loved ones, as they grow older, face many risks. But together, we can make a difference. You can support the Gatekeepers Program, which provides support, care, and protection needed by our elders. Come to the Shining Affair, a fundraiser for Shining Care. Here's your hosts and masters of ceremony, Carl and Linda Bott, to tell you more.
That's right. Save the date, Saturday, February 15th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Wind River Resort and Casino.
Share the love for the Gatekeeper's Shining Affair, an elegant evening of entertainment to benefit at-risk elders. Remember, bling, sparkle, and shine. Show your love and support for our seniors.
Semi-formal to formal, come dressed in your best bling, sparkle, and shine for a chance to win Best in Bling Awards.
And Carl, I'll see you in the kissing photo booth.
Oh, yeah.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. I love the heartbeat drum. That is so cool. Okay, we are talking about colonoscopy, endoscopy, and all the scopy stuff that we're supposed to do to prevent going into any kind of cancerous situation. Prevention is the key here, everybody. So Dr. Malachi is going to explain to you why you need the upper scope when certain symptoms are happening. Take it away, Dr. Malachi.
Okay, Patty. Well, what happens with people say, well, what are you talking about, upper scope? So that's where we put a much smaller tube, about the size of a big pen, diameter of a big pen. We put that tube in your mouth. You're sedated so you don't gag. It goes down your esophagus into your stomach. And then normally we go into the first part of the duodenum, which is the first part of the small intestine. The reason we do those things, and most of the time that scope is brought on by symptoms. For instance, you know, the colonoscopy, you're supposed to do it on a certain interval. We don't have to do the upper scope ever if you never have any symptoms. So, because it turns out that cancers in the upper part of the GI tract, like esophageal cancer and stomach cancer, they all come from unhealed acid-related problems. The most common physical manifestation of stress in humans, usually stress is what contributes to it, the most common one is inappropriate stomach acid. And the way our body's set up is our body's supposed to release this acid only when we eat. The acid actually, of course, helps us digest our food. And back 20,000 years ago, when a lot of food probably wasn't cooked and there was a high, you know, fruit and vegetable diet, the acid helps release the nutrients. So we need the acid. But you just don't want acid in there when your stomach is empty. Mm-hmm. We used to call it the big five. So there's five things that cause inappropriate stomach acid release. One of the biggest ones is nicotine. So if you're smoking or chewing tobacco, you're set up for this problem. Alcohol is another one. Aspirin or aspirin-related drugs, ibuprofen, Aleve. Sometimes caffeine and chocolate will really bother people's stomachs and trigger the acid. But last and not least, it's stress. And it can be physical stress, too. Like if you break your leg, sometimes you'll get too much stomach acid. But psychological stress is the most common one.
Well, that's what made me end up having the upper endoscopy thing is when my husband Richard was dying. He had terminal brain disease called behavioral variant frontal temporal degeneration. And it was about 8 years of really high stress. The last four was horrible. The last one was horrible. I put all my stress in my esophagus and started having that whole acid reflux thing.
Exactly.
And it was terrible. But the stress had to go somewhere.
Well, and that's where it went. It's my weak spot, too. I've had this upper scope twice myself. So so it's real common. And the other thing is kind of a myth about stomach acid is people would say, well, hey, I'd get scoped if I had heartburn. About one out of five people with an ulcer have no heartburn.
I had zero heartburn. I had chest pains.
Oh, yeah.
Because you tell them why. Yeah, could you explain that to me?
Okay, so it's one of the most common causes for people to come to the emergency room with chest pain. They think they're having a heart attack. And, well, I've done about 1,000 of those upper scopes myself, too, so I have that equipment at the office. And when you put the camera down in there, if you stop about 3/4 of the way to the stomach, you're a quarter of an inch from the person's heart. And you can just see the heartbeat. It's really kind of really cool, actually, when you're doing it. But it turns out that the pain nerve for that part of the esophagus and the pain nerve for the heart, they go into the spinal cord at exactly the same level right next to each other. Mm-hmm. So I've had lots of patients who've had both a heart attack and reflux problem, and they say they can't tell the difference in the symptoms.
Oh, the first few times it happened to me, I was certain I was having a heart attack. I ended up in an ambulance going to the hospital once because I had zero heartburn. So I wouldn't have told you I had acid reflux, anything like that. I had crushing chest pain.
Oh, yeah. And it's many years ago, but I spent about 7 years in the ER on and off. And when the patients would roll in, the first thing we would do is do an EKG. And if their EKG looked normal and they didn't have risk factors, we would give them this thing called a GI cocktail, which is about 4 ounces of antacids and, you know, some other stuff, a little bit of viscous xylocaine. Yeah. And if their symptoms are gone in a minute, guess what? Mm-hmm. You got reflux. So reflux, it can create chronic inflammation in the distal, the lower third of the esophagus. Sometimes reflux comes all the way up to your vocal cords. Mm-hmm. I see one a month. People come in with a chronic cough. They usually cough a little worse at night because they're laying flat, and a little worse in the morning. And then by the end of the day, the cough is cleared up, but it comes back the next night.
Right.
And it's because their vocal cords are being irritated by the acid.
Now, the irritated vocal cords, too, can cause sinus mucus and
all
things
kinds
like that.
Of trouble. All right. kinds of trouble. It can make you wheeze. Sometimes the patient's wheezing, and the only reason they're wheezing is because stomach acid's coming up.
Right. So you can be hoarse. You can be coughing. You can have sinus issues because all
and
that
you can get vocal
stuff
cord
is
cancer from it. Too.
Yes.
So it ordinarily takes 20 years of untreated inflammation to get cancer in these tissues that we're talking about. And, you know, I'm old now. I've seen all that. I'm just to tell this story about one of my friends. I wasn't his doctor, but his son, they were such a great family. His son played basketball with my son, and this is a long time ago. And he was a just wonderful, gregarious guy. We'd sit next to each other in the bleachers and watch our boys play. And he usually brought a Costco-sized thing of Tums with him, and he just ate them like candy. And I told him, I said, hey, you got to get that checked out. And he just laughed, and he said, oh, that's just my ulcer. I've had it since I was 20. And he was 50. So it was 3 years. So on the third year, he walked into the gym for the first game, and he'd lost about 30 pounds. And I said, hey, what's going on? You know, you got pretty skinny. And he goes, yeah, I just don't feel like eating anymore. And he finally, about 6 weeks, I finally talked him into getting scoped. And he had, you know, terminal stomach cancer. And it was just awful.
And he did that thing where it let it go from something that could be prevented all the way to cancer because he ignored it.
Yeah. And he was, you know, like most men, he was a little macho and a little tough, and he didn't want to spend the money, and he wasn't worried about it because he'd lived with it for 30 years.
Well, so many people, not just men, but men especially, don't want to be seen as a weenie. They don't want to be weak, and they don't want to be complaining, and they think they can control it with their Tums or their Pepcid or whatever. But what's really cool and what you taught me about the whole endoscopy thing is when you have this chronic kind of, I put my stress in my esophagus, or you have a stomach ulcer, or you have acid reflux, or you even have chest pains that you're not sure what they are, you need to see your doctor, because this going into some kind of esophageal cancer, stomach cancer, larynx cancer, whatever, is totally preventable.
Yeah, and it's not even the cancer angle. Like, so I started med school 41 years ago, and back in those days, we didn't have the fabulous drugs we have now to block stomach acid. So there was really no way to treat it, and we were in a busy hospital, and we probably did, back then, for a bleeding ulcer, we didn't have scopes. What we did is we operated on them. And we probably did 2 bleeding ulcer surgeries a week. We had 1 perfed ulcer a month.
Yeah.
And every now and then we'd miss, someone would miss the diagnosis, and the perforated ulcer patients can die too.
Right, they bleed out.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily even bleeding out. When there's a hole in your stomach, the acid goes into your peroneal cavity,
yeah,
and that kills you.
Peritonitis,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a whole kettle of fish that you don't want to open, and the scope itself, it's arguably easier than the colonoscopy because you don't have to do the prep.
Yeah, there's no prep for it.
No, you just can't eat the morning of your test. So I just, you know.
Well, what I liked is when you knew I was going to have a colonoscopy, you said, Patty, do the endoscopy too, because you might as well ruin one day, not
exactly.
Two.
Yeah, it's a.
You're out cold once, let them do both ends.
Yeah, pan endoscopy, we call it. And,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just more efficient, and the doctors like it because, you know, they get it all done in one sitting. So.
And I'm really glad I had it, and I will stay up on it because I tend to put my stress there, which puts me at risk for esophageal stuff.
Yeah, and I'm back on my stomach acid medicine because one of my really young kids died a couple of months ago, and it's just got to me. So.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah.
Well, the other important thing you taught me, too, was I had stopped taking my stomach acid blocker, the omeprazole. How do you
Omeprazole.
Say that? Thank
yeah.
you, omeprazole. I had stopped taking that because I had heard that it made your bone density go down. And I work hard to keep my bone density up. And you said you are more at risk for esophageal cancer than you are for osteoporosis.
Yeah, and everything in our job is pro and con. And, you know, that study that got published was a correlation or epidemiologic study. So mm-hmm. Most doctors don't pay any attention to them at all. That guy that published it just got tenure because he published it.
Okay.
But that's from looking at mass. Now we have computer records, so mass data. And if you look at the older patients tend to get, the older, more likely they are to have stomach acid problems. That's mm-hmm. a generic rule. And the older patients get, the more likely they are to have osteoporosis.
So it's a correlation that's not necessarily
not
A plus B equals C.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but that made sense to me. And what's fascinating is what I've really learned is that the more we know about this stuff and the reasons why we should do our preventative stuff, the more it makes sense. It's very easy to fall into this pattern of, oh, it's all about the doctors want the money and they want the tests and it's big pharma wanting you to take the acid blocker and all that.
In the fever swamp of the internet especially, there's so many people that say, oh, yeah, that's what they're trying to do. And no, we're not. I'm just tired of burying people for no reason.
Yeah.
It bugs me.
Well, and esophageal cancer is not a pleasant way to die either.
Oh, it's awful. I had one of my patients. He was my friend. He lived down the street from me. And he was a rancher, tough old rancher, and he had reflux. And I treated him for 20 years, and he refused to take the medicines. His wife couldn't make him take it. No one could make him take it. And, yeah, he died of esophageal cancer. It was just sad.
Well, and I can see why some people would say, I don't have acid reflux. I don't feel anything. Because partly what happens is your esophagus starts to protect itself by laying down cells that are normally in your intestine, and that's called Barrett's.
Yeah.
And so your esophagus protects itself, and those cells don't respond to acid, so you don't feel pain.
Right.
And the lack of feeling pain is not necessarily, doesn't necessarily mean you don't have an acid reflux problem. And that was so enlightening to me. So enlightening. In fact, it was enlightening to me to figure out, oh, I don't even get acid reflux pain. I get chest pains.
Yeah, and there's other little factors, too. A lot of times a little bit of the stomach will actually pop up through the diaphragm, and we end up calling that a hiatal hernia. Most people have heard of those. Hiatal hernias are pretty common, tend to be inherited. I've seen a bunch of them. And, you know, those people are more likely to be chronic refluxers through no fault of their own. In the old days, we would put, no one has dictionaries anymore, but we would put 3-inch dictionaries under the headpost of the bed because mm-hmm. it doesn't help to sleep on 2 pillows, but if you elevate the whole mattress a little, it makes gravity works for you and helps keep the acid from coming up there.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And that keeps the GERD from happening, that where it's the acid is in your stomach and it slides up your throat while you're laying flat.
Exactly.
It's very painful and very destructive to your esophagus because it's just pure stomach acid.
Well, stomach acid is a pH of 1. In my day, there was no clear coat on cars. If you threw up on your buddy's car, you had to wash it off right away. It would bleach the paint.
Spoken like a true doctor.
Well, not that I would ever throw up on my buddy's
No,
car.
Never. You no. never were like in
no.
college.
No,
thinking.
Never.
I got
would.
That.
Never
okay, we're going to go to break on that note. And when we come back, we're going to get your pen and paper because we're going to tell you exactly what you need to do the proper prevention for your health.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay and Dr. Richard Malachi, and you are tuning in to our show regarding prevention and taking care of your health and your whole GI tract. So we want you to get a pen and paper, and we want you to make a list of some of the things that you should do. And one of the first things we were talking about at the break is you've got to make an appointment. Call your doctor. And now what if a lot of people these days don't even have a primary care physician?
Yeah, that's pretty common.
And you can go to a walk-in clinic. You can call and say, I need a physical. And you can go to the walk-in clinic and do it.
All of them do that.
Okay. So if you don't have a primary care physician and you don't know how to get one or there isn't one available in your community, go to a walk-in clinic, call and make an appointment, say, I need a physical. I haven't had a physical in a long time. You don't need to be embarrassed. You don't need to feel like you're a weenie that you're going to get checked. Okay, so what do you want them to ask for in this physical? Because a lot of doctors these days, I mean, this is my complaint to Dr. Malachi all the time. A lot of doctors do the three-minute exam, and you've got maybe time to tell them one or two things that are bugging you. So, in fact, I'll cut you off for just a second here. I suggest to all my clients, you type out a list and you bullet it, and you do it like in 14-point type. You say, these are the things that have been bothering me, or these are the things I haven't done. I haven't had a pap smear in years. I haven't ever had a colonoscopy. I have stomach pain. I have a cough that won't go away. I have rectal bleeding sometimes. Yeah. I get chronic yeast infections. Whatever it is that's bugging you, bullet it and type it out and take it to this physical exam.
Yeah,
okay, go for it.
Well, in my opinion, all good doctors like a list. Mm-hmm. I love it when my patients bring a list. Because mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, the bad thing is they'll be a little nervous sometimes. And, you know, I think I've asked all the I ask a big long list of questions too. But I love a list because then they'll sometimes call back the next day and say, oh, I forgot to ask you about this. Mm-hmm. Well, write it down. A good doctor is going to grab your list and say thank you.
And put it in their chart.
Yeah.
And I tell people, make the list over the week or two that you're waiting for your appointment. Because you'll think of things. Or you'll go, I need to talk to them about that pain I get in my stomach every night.
Yeah, we much prefer to have every little thing. Even if you think it's an insignificant thing, I'd rather like to hear every little thing. Because the primary care job is mostly kind of like 20 questions. So I normally can figure, most of the time I can figure out what's wrong with you before I put my stethoscope on you. Mm-hmm. You know, just by asking you a question, and one question leads to the next question. You know, the answer will lead me on to the next question and the next question and the next question. So,
but yeah. If you have a doctor who's very typical these days, which is not Dr. Malachi, he's a very unusual doctor.
Just old.
You're good. There's a difference. Some doctors will give you the whole 3 minutes to say everything that you're supposed to do, and they'll hand you a prescription and walk out of the room. So your list is going to help them really treat you. But on this list, I want Dr. Malachi to put on your list the things that you should be having checked out in your physical.
Yeah, so we're taught to, it's a thing called a review system. So a review system is in my line of work, and if you're an ophthalmologist, it's very limited review system, just all questions about your vision and your eyes. But I'm top of the toes, or bottom of the toes to the top of the head. So I just go down the list, and most of the time, most of my questions will also be on that patient's list, mm-hmm. You know, because... Well, we ask about your heart, we ask about the esophagus, we ask about stomach, I always ask about stomach acid, and ask about changes going potty number two, ask about changes going potty number one. Girls that are menstruating, we ask about their cycle. Believe it or not, I always ask everybody about their sex life. It's an important thing sometimes.
Sometimes
it's important, sometimes it's not for the patient. But and then ask them about their joints and their back and all the stuff that just is real common.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, I mean, that's what a physical is. It's mostly talking. In fact, mm-hmm. when my first year in med school, they trotted out this old guy that was probably 85 years old, and he was a retired country doctor. And he told us that we would make 90% of our diagnosis based on history alone, that's talking, 5% of our diagnosis on tests, x-rays, and 5% we wouldn't get. And, you know, we had all these fancy tests. We thought that he was kind of full of it. But within about 6 weeks, everybody in that class knew he was right.
You know, I think it is about asking your patients how they're doing and listening to their answers. So in today's fast-paced medical appointments, have your list with all your stuff. And the tests that we want everybody to have as a preventative measure are their mammograms or pap smears.
Yes.
And then what are the ones in this whole GI track are you wanting people to do?
So the rules on colonoscopy, American Cancer Society recommendation, if you have a direct family relative with colon cancer, you should start your screening at age 40.
Okay.
And if you're fine, then you can wait till 50 for your next one. If you have ulcerative colitis, you need to start getting scoped sooner. Usually you end up getting scoped because that's how we make the diagnosis. And then... just now, you know, the government's trying to save money, and they've got some data from some of these big insurance companies that suggest that if you have two colonoscopies, this is interesting for you, Dr. Patty, if you have two colonoscopies 10 years apart with no polyps, you're probably not a polyp former. Mm-hmm. So the government's saying, well, hey, we don't want to pay for any more screening colonoscopies. So you might have dodged the proverbial bullet.
Or paying out of pocket if I'm going to do my prevention.
Yeah, and
and there's also the new test, that Cologuard,
yeah.
Which is...
You give them a little sample of your stool, and then they pay someone probably not nearly enough to look through your...
Yeah, really, what a job.
Yeah, and the idea is to look for cancerous or even precancerous cells. Because, you know, a polyp that's an inch long has 10 million cells in it. So some of those cells break off every day because, you know, what's going past them. And the hope is of this company that makes the Cologuard test, the hope is that they can detect colon cancer that way. Now, if it's perfect, it would make colonoscopy obsolete, which everybody would jump up and down in pure pleasure. Yeah. When I scopes got invented when I was in my training, so they taught us. They don't teach family doctors how to do them now, but I learned how to do them. So I've got the equipment in my office, and I've done bunches of them. And
The Cologuard can have false positives, which
then
turn into a colonoscopy, have false negatives because they don't catch them.
Yeah, and if you right now they're claiming a 92% accuracy rate, but for me it's not. That's just not good enough. Mm-hmm. And the colonoscopy isn't that bad. So the night before is bad, but the test itself isn't that bad.
Well, and the night before is very survivable now.
Yeah.
It was not that bad. So you are clear when you know you've had a cleared colonoscopy.
Right.
Like, you don't have to guess. Was it a false negative?
Oh, no. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah. And I can tell you, there's a relief to that.
Yeah.
There's a big relief to that. So making an appointment with your doctor, taking your list with any dumb little thing that's bugging you.
We want to hear all the dumb little things.
Okay. Bullet them. Hand your doctor the list. Keep a copy of it. Date it. So they put it in your file, okay? And then go in and say, look, I've never had a colonoscopy. I've avoided it. I'm ready to do this. And you can even say, I listened to Therapy in a Nutshell. And Dr. Malecki and Dr. Bay talked me into having my colonoscopy, so you do not need to send me to therapy because I'm not crazy. I'm just trainable.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, and I got plenty of work. I'm not looking for more patients. But take care of yourself. It's really not that hard. And then, you know, you don't have to have that conversation someday like, oh, gee, would I be okay if I had done what you said 10 years ago?
Well, and I don't like to use fear tactics, but I've had some clients with colon cancer. And I want you to picture that when you've got colon cancer, you're going to be in radiation. They're going to tattoo a little mark on your butt. That's where they're going to put the radiation. They're going to put you in a position where you're tushy sticking up in the air, and you've got to go in and have radiation, and you're going to have chemo. And it's... I would much rather go through a colonoscopy once.
Yes.
Than all of that.
You're correct.
That my one client that I had went through radiation, and she had rectal burns from the radiation.
Oh, it's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean,
it was so painful and so embarrassing for her and so difficult that it's highly motivating to do the little bit of inconvenience for the colonoscopy than to try and do years of colon cancer.
Yeah, and as many as a third of colon cancers, and polyps as well, of course, are within reach of the doctor's finger. So sometimes people say, why did he stick his finger in my butt? It's not something we want to do.
Gosh,
but,
not your favorite part, right?
But I found one 3 years ago. And a patient who'd never had a colonoscopy. It was about the size of a peanut. I knew as soon as I felt it, I knew what it was.
And so you went forward with a colonoscopy, and then
and she got it. She had to have. She had to wear a bag. She had to have a
colonoscopy.
Yeah,
colostomy.
A colostomy. But then we hooked her back up, and she's good to go. And
well, and so men that avoid the rectal exam because of all the reasons that
there's lots of reasons
they avoid it, but there's a reason for checking for prostate cancer and for looking for colon cancer for just a rectal exam, and it is not going to kill you guys.
Yeah, no, the proctologists in med school have the best jokes because they're all butt jokes.
Oh yeah.
And our proctologist, he said, there's two reasons not to do a rectal on the patient. One is if they don't have a rectum, and two is if all your fingers have been chopped off. Those are the two reasons.
All right, so I got to share this part with everybody. Randy and Dr. Malecki both wanted me to write on my butt, exit only, before I went in for this colonoscopy. And both volunteered to write it. So I'm like, oh, hell no, this is not happening.
We see that stuff all the time with Sharpies. People are pretty clever, you know, especially like in the operating room. They'll say, you know, if you're getting a knee surgery, they'll say, not this one,
exactly.
Or put a big arrow.
But I've never heard of anybody writing it on their tushy. And it's so, and think about, someone else has to write it. If
that's,
you do that.
Yeah, it's hard
so
to
I said to Dr. Reddy at the endoscopy center, I said, so that you guys wanted me to do this, and it wasn't happening. I wasn't going to do that. And he said, oh, we haven't seen that yet, but we have seen glitter.
Yeah,
and
I went,
glitter? He said, oh, yeah, glitter.
Little bling.
Bling. A butt bling. Just for the doctor.
Brighten the day.
I went, okay, you guys have way too much fun in here.
Yeah, things can get pretty twisted.
Well, I walked in the office, and I looked at the nurse, and I said, stunt double. She said, I haven't heard that one yet. Yeah, I was trying to get out of it, but I went.
Yep,
I kept moving
forward. Brave.
I was brave, and I did it. So if you've been listening to this show, and you have been putting off your colonoscopy, you haven't been talking to your doctor about severe acid reflux, you have been avoiding... Stop it. Right now. Stop it. So even though your doctor's office is closed because this is a Saturday, call and leave a message and say, I'd like to set up an appointment for my physical. If it's a walk-in clinic you're going to go to, call and make an appointment and say, I need to make an appointment for a physical. You guys, it's cheaper in the long run. It's peace of mind is priceless, just priceless. And not going into cancer is awesome.
Yeah, you don't have to have that conversation.
I hope if Dr. Malachi and I have saved one life here today, I hope it's yours. So this is Therapy in a Nutshell, and we're just trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time. Thank you, Dr. Malachi, for joining me.
Thank you, Patty.
KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.